Welcome to 30-something Gamers. This is a brand new podcast on gaming. As the title suggests, we're not up all night playing multiplayer sessions, clocking up 100 hours of gameplay a week. We're changing nappies and trying to find the best mortgage deals while squeezing a little bit of gaming in left and right. So me with myself, Tom. I'm a streamer and a content creator, also known as Retro Revival, online, and with my co-host, Boxy Artie. Artie, how are you?
That was a lovely introduction. Thank you, Tom. I'm all right. Thank you, mate. This is exciting.
This is
like a new step for us.
This could be one step towards greatness. And everyone who's listening can write in the comments, I was there for the first ever episode of a podcast juggernaut.
Yeah, okay.
I take it I've got more optimism than yourself, Artie, yeah?
No, we need that. We do need that. I feel like the balance of your enthusiasm and my, disappointment with everything is going to be a nice balance. It's a beautiful thing, and I'm positive. It's 2025. We've got to do new things. We've got to throw ourselves into exciting new ventures. So, yeah. Hello, everyone. My name's Boxy Artie. I have been gaming for most of my life, and I have never streamed. I've never ever record myself playing and talking at the same time, but I like to talk about games and I like to get a bit creative with how I describe certain things. So yeah, just appreciate you bringing me along for this voyage.
Now, Artie is very, very humble when he sees me bringing him along. This is to absolute behemoths in the retro gaming UK community coming together. That's what I tell myself. No, Artie is very humble. His content is great. At the end, we will let you know all our socials, everything like that. But we just wanted to get on and talk about video games, so that's what we're going to do. Normally, we're going to let you know what we've been doing in gaming, streaming, content creation, all that type of stuff. But we've been the first episode, I thought we'd introduce ourselves. So, like I said, my name's Retro Revival, but you can call me Tom. I am a content creator, streamer, podcast creator now, I suppose. And I'm also a primary school teacher. So there's not many hours in the day when you tie that in with two children under four, which is lovely. So yeah, Artie, tell us about yourself.
So mid-30s, been gaming for most of my life, I would say. I started off, actually, let's start with this. What was your first console? Let's give the listeners an idea of, you know, where we are in life.
Yeah. First console for me was the Mega Drive. Sonic the Hedgehog 1, I put absolute hours into it. And I'm a big Sonic the Hedgehog fan, but Sonic the Hedgehog 1 isn't very good. I know that might cause issues, but it isn't. But I put so much time into that.
We're starting off with the hot opinions
already. Straight away.
Now we're cooking on gas. My first console was Super Nintendo, so that might, I had Super Mario All-Stars, and I put shitloads of time into that.
Good to see that you've been wrong from a young age, joining the dark side from an early Nintendo child. But
Oh, come on.
Well, you see my collection, you know I've got a lot of Nintendo now. I had an N64 after my Mega Drive, so I did sort of swap allegiance. I actually went Mega Drive, N64, PlayStation 2, Xbox, so I'm just anyone's.
No, that's good. That's nice. Yeah, I mean, I've stuck to Nintendo and PlayStation. My brother had an Xbox, so I kind of dipped into a few things there. But I will say the Mega Drive had the better box arts, so I'll give you that.
I'll tell you what is, at the minute they have the cheaper box arts, because I'm a retro collector, and those cardboard SNES boxes just didn't survive time. And if you find a decent one, get your checkbook out, basically.
Oh, they're shit, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got Aladdin on the SNES, and honestly, it looks like it's went 10 rounds with Mike Tyson. It's absolutely battered.
I know. To be fair, the TikTok world has kind of opened my eyes with how kind of serious it all is, especially the whole CEX not delivering their manuals and things.
Oh, hey, if you haven't got a manual in, the CEX lottery, as it's called, on TikTok and everywhere like that. It's honestly, for me, I'm not too bothered in those respects.
Yeah,
I just keep seeing with the price of them and how they're going up, it's a good excuse for the missus where I can say it's an investment, it's for the kids' future, even though I'm not going to sell them at all. So then I start saying, oh, it's the inheritance. Look how much it was and how much it's worth now. It's just an excuse to buy more games, really.
Yeah, I'll try that one. Yeah, that doesn't work for me. Just why the fuck are you hoarding our house with all this, useless plastic that you don't even play?
Yeah. Well, I think she used it as sort of leverage because I converted the garage into a gaming room and she was all nice about, yeah, get it done, get the shelves in, put on, yeah, you can have a big TV or that. And then as soon as it was finished, I was like, do you know the office? Can we turn that into a walk-in wardrobe? And I just didn't have a leg to stand on. She just done me over. So, yeah, it's worth it for a walk-in wardrobe, to be fair.
Walk-in wardrobe, garage, blimey. We've got
Oh.
royalty on this
Oh, yeah, we're talking.
podcast.
Right, so our first part of the podcast, what we're going to do is remaster, remake, recycle, exactly what it sounds like. Basically, we're going to choose three games. We are going to tell you opinions, which one we would remaster, which one we completely do a remake on, and which one we recycle. We would just say a bin it, but the three R's make it sound sexy. So that's what we're going for.
And we're all
Today's.
about sexiness on this
We
podcast.
are all about sexiness. I haven't told you this, Artie, but I'm actually sitting in my pants. We are doing this over Zoom, and I just thought it would build a little bit of risque to it. I feel on edge now. If I stand up, you see it
It's
all. You
all
see it all.
over. So you really cracked this working from home thing.
I do have to go to work I do have to go to work this afternoon, so maybe put trousers on, seeing as I work in a primary school. So, the three games this week are three big ones from the PS2 era: Simpsons Hit and Run, Simpsons Road Rage, and Simpsons Skateboarding. So, Artie, I'm going to let you give me your opinion first, and I'll tell you whether I agree.
I think I know what you're going to say, Tom. So usually in these situations, I say remake the shit one. But Simpsons Skateboarding was the biggest pile of cum to ever come out on the PS2. It was apps, and in preparation for this seminar, whatever you want to call it, I replayed Simpsons Skateboarding, and I can't believe how broken it is. It's absolutely awful. So I don't think even think remaking it would do a hell of a lot of good, because I mean they're all knockoffs. We've got Crazy Taxi, GTA, and Tony Hawk's. I mean, if you remake Simpsons Skateboarding, you're just going to get a cheaper, shittier Tony Hawk game. So I would definitely say put skateboarding in the bin. I do like Road Rage, and to be fair, I think it is a bit janky, and they could sort out a few things with it. But that was the whole kind of Crazy Taxi vibe to it. It was supposed to be a little bit wonky. So, and I think Hit and Run still holds up. I mean, the only thing in negative I've got to say about it is maybe a bit too short. But for the sake of nostalgia, I'd say remaster Hit and Run and remake Road Rage.
So you're going recycle Simpsons Skateboarding,
Yeah.
remaster
Hit
Hit
and
and
Run.
Run, and
Yeah.
then remake Road Rage. Well, I'm slightly different because you're wrong.
Oh,
So
hang on. Whoa, 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 whoa. If this is going to work, this business venture, can't
no,
say you're wrong. You
you've
say,
got.
I disagree, or your opinion's L, as the kids say.
Okay, right. So we'll try that again. So your opinion's shit, okay?
Well, glad we cleared that up.
So for me, and this isn't just to get people shouting at us in the comments. Please let us know down on the comments. I don't know what platforms we're on yet. We are really, really early into this. But whatever platform we are, you'll be able to put a comment and probably tell us what you want, but probably scream at me at the minute because I'm going to say recycle. Hit and run.
Ooh, okay.
So,
I am intrigued. You've tickled my interest.
right,
I
okay,
think you're going
so,
to have to explain it a little bit more,
yeah.
but go on then.
So, for me, now it could be the nostalgia glasses, but I didn't play much of Hit and Run back in the day. But just got repetitive. I played the GameCube version not long ago, and it just seemed really samey stuff all the time. And for me, if you're going to play a knockoff GTA, play GTA, play Saints Row, play any of those games, and they do it better. I don't think the Simpsons sort of comedy and where they come from really translated into that Grand Theft Auto archetype. So for
Ooh.
me, I would remake Simpsons Skateboarding, the one you said to get rid of, because I agree with you, it is a steaming pile of shit. But I think the concept's good. a Tony Hawk's in Simpsons locations with their sort of comedy and their characters and stuff, I think could be good if it wasn't done by absolute wank muffins. I don't know. I can't even remember off the top of my head who made it. You said you played it recently. Can you remember what studio it was?
Is it THQ? I don't know.
THQ.
I've just pulled that name out of my arse. I really don't know. But So
you said at the start you would remake the shit one, which is where my sort of opinion came from.
And I would be inclined to agree with that direction, but I think because I can see what a Simpsons skateboarding decent version would look like, as you say, it would just be like Tony Hawk. So why don't you just play Tony Hawk? And I would say I don't agree that it had the humor or the feel of the show, because all the way through, I mean, the story's absolutely pathetic. It says, oh, you've got to win a prize of like, and it's something ridiculous. It's like 50 quid or something. And you get 10p every time you do something right.
Come on, American audience, 10 cents.
Sorry, 10 cents. Sorry, a dime, whatever it is. But yeah, the stakes are so low. Why the hell would I care?
Yeah, I see that. But I would go, if you're remaking it, I don't know whether I've thought not remake it, but literally just do a Simpsons skateboarding game completely different. I would go more Tony Hawk's 1, 2, 3, 4 rather than your Thug and stuff like that, where it's open world, literally like arcadey. You've got 3 minutes. These are things you've got to do. Loads of levels, bish, bash, bosh. Thank you very much. That's the type of thing I go. And obviously, that means I would remaster Road Rage. That's basically because, for me, that's the best one of the bunch. I love Crazy Taxi back in the day. Played it loads in the arcade. If I was going to pick one of those games up now, and if you're going back there, you're probably just going to pick it up and play for half an hour, 45 minutes or whatever. Or if I had people round, I would play Road Rage. Good arcade fun. Pass the pad round. You don't have to sort of invest. It's just fun. I think for me, on Road Rage, you do a lot of the things that you do on Hit and Run, but there's a bit higher stakes because you've got like, oh, it's 2 minutes to do this, add time or whatever, stuff like that. You're driving around on Road Rage, but you just then you get out and go in the Quickie Mart and change your costume. Woo.
Yeah, but I just feel like Hit and Run cracked the kind of feel of the show. And I think that was what was missing, because Simpsons games have been going for years and years and years, and they're all kind of shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Simpsons wrestling. Wrestling is just comically bad. You can have fun with that one because it's just so awful. But with skateboarding, there is some kind of professional, you know, craft to it, but it's just done so badly and without much thought. I just can't even see it. Even if it was done semi-decent, it'd be that interesting still.
Yeah, I come from the thought of, as well, is apart from obviously Tony Hawk's 1 and 2 remastered, which was still quite a while ago, when have we had like a skateboarding game come out recently?
Yeah, it's true. Well, I've just picked up Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. And that's a kind of Jet Set Radio homage, which I'm quite excited for. And I never played Jet Set Radio. And that is literally just traversal wearing rollerblades across a big city. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. But, yeah, you're right. Well, they really fucked up Tony Hawk with number 5. And did you have Tony Hawk Ride?
Shall I tell you what it is? I was going to mention this near the end of what we're sort of doing at the minute. But on my YouTube, I'm going to start making videos of giving myself like challenges of games to get for my retro collection, because I'm going for a full PS2, full 360. And this month's challenge, which I'm recording for at the minute but obviously haven't got up, is to get every Tony Hawk's game for the PS2 and Xbox 360. And the challenge is to get it cheaper than if I went to CEX and bought it.
Okay.
And I do have Tony Hawk's Ride with the board in the post on its way to me right now. So I haven't yet. But next one of these, I can give you my experiences.
Yeah, I can already predict what your experience is going to be like. It's an absolute travesty. Well, it's just horrible. I got it for Christmas one year, and I was really excited. I don't even think I got past the tutorial mission. It's that broken. And if if it's secondhand what you're picking up, Christ, if it didn't pick up the connections brand new out the box, Christ knows what it's going to be like secondhand.
Well, let's just say, considering it's a big, massive peripheral and game and stuff like that, it wasn't that expensive, which normally screams to it being shit. So I'm looking forward to that. But I've got a few more pounds than when I was a kid, so I'm hoping it doesn't break in half. That's the one thing I'm hoping for. I'm hoping it's not like I've never stepped on a Wii Fit board in I don't know how many years, but I'd be frightened of how far that morbidly obese thing would go up to. It would
Oh,
probably change my life.
it's a right laugh. Oh, mate, go on Wii Fit. It's so funny because they count how many days you haven't been on it. So they come on, the little me characters, all happy and stuff. And it's like, hey, haven't seen you in like 10,000 days. Let's check.
As soon as I get on the board, I'll be like, what the fuck's happened?
I know. Oh, my center of gravity is like three streets to the left.
So now we're on to the main course of the show. Artie is going to give us a hot take. If you've seen any of his stuff online, he is a master of just winding people up, really. These are his true opinions, and he will make you normally spit feathers. So, I haven't heard this. This is the first time I'm hearing it. Artie, what is your hot take for episode one?
Just a caveat that I don't go out there deliberately to wind people up. And to be fair, with how, you know, toxic the internet can be, it's not actually been that bad. Usually I don't try and go out and look for controversy. But to be fair, those people, even the people who disagree with me, kind of be like, oh, I respect your opinion, which is kind of nice and sobering, you know. So.
Well, I've not had that recently, Artie. I stoked the fire a little bit with a video recently. I recently hit 10k on TikTok, which means I can start earning money from videos now, as long as people actually watch them, which is the hard thing. Mm. And I put a video, you've probably seen it, about Bully / Canis Kane and Medit. And it was never called Bully on the PS2. Obviously, because I'm putting stuff online and I'm a creator and stuff like that, I did research because I thought that was true and I did research if it was there. I put it up and the comments went mad of people complaining and saying, I definitely had it, it's in me sock drawer, all this type of stuff, and then starting to get personal. I did have some of that internet vitriol. So when you say you didn't try to wind people up, I did make another two videos on the back of it just to continue to stoke that fire. Because do you know what gets views? People not liking you, which is...
pissing people off, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you're a brave man, and I have to say, I didn't think that opinion was that controversial, to be quite honest.
It wasn't. Honestly, if you look at my notifications on TikTok, there's like 3, 4, 5 users that have, like, anyone who's commented on, they've commented on everyone saying, nah, you're wrong. Well, I've actually got it. Well, you're wrong because it's here in my hand. I live in Wales, and over here it was definitely this. And then we have the flip side of other people agreeing with us, commenting on them, and I'm just sitting there and they're just racking up views for me. So I'm just like, just enjoy your little argument there, and I just stay out of it and try not to be personal. To be fair, the best thing that riles people up is whatever anyone comment said, I just went down and just wrote the word nope.
Yeah, and I did admire the approach, because sometimes on mine, if people say, oh, they disagreed or whatever, I kind of take the, you know, the neutral approach, be like, well, I understand, you know, people like certain games. I don't try and disagree that people don't like a certain game that I particularly don't. But no, I thought that was a fun thing to watch. As you say, it was like a raging fire that you were just kind of sitting back and admiring.
Do you know what it was? It did really show me how little attention people pay on social media. In the first 5 seconds, I say this game was never called Bully on the PS2 in the UK. I make it very obvious, and literally the first few comments are all, well, I had it on the Wii and it was called Bully. I'm like, yeah, great, I didn't see you didn't.
You didn't listen to the video.
Yeah. But I'm used to people not listening to me. I'm a primary school teacher, so let's get on with your hot take for today.
I think Crash Team Racing is better than Mario Kart. And I'm going to say all the Mario Karts.
All the Mario Karts. Let's say, Double Dash, which has a little bit of that tag team stuff sort of in it.
It does, but I think Crash Team Racing blows all of them out of the water. I think in terms of game design, it has adventure mode. There's not just the races. There are boss battles. There are collectibles. There are the relics. There's so much content in that game. And what I love is that whatever Mario Kart game I'm playing, if you put it up to 150cc or whatever the highest one is, it still feels really slow, and I don't know what it is, but Crash Team Racing has this really kind of chaotic kind of ragged kind of unhingedness to it, where everyone feels like they're just driving like a complete twat. And I just have so much more fun with it. It just gets my adrenaline so pumped. And it not the Mario Kart doesn't achieve that, I don't think. Mario Kart feels very sensible, I would say.
See, if you hadn't heard already my voice, I don't agree with you. Like I mentioned earlier on, I was N64, so
Yeah.
Mario Kart 64. I sort of, when I first started gaming, it was a very solo adventure, and then we moved house, and my friends across the road, they had an N64 as well, so we played GoldenEye, Mario Kart, all those to death. And Mario Kart, it just have, when you're saying chaotic and adrenaline, I think you can never rest in Mario Kart, because you can be at the front and there's no guarantee you'll win if you're playing multiplayer. I think if you're playing the main game, going for the cups and stuff like that, I might agree with you, but playing multiplayer for me on Mario Kart, if I'm in the lead, I can't rest to think, all right, I've got this, I'm miles ahead. I still think there could be a blue shell or a lightning or something, and it's going to sort of even the odds. Even every Christmas, I take my Switch into school and we play again. Well, I let all the kids have a tournament, and then when it gets to the finals, I come and step in and take a place just to destroy them and just to teach them a life lesson of it doesn't matter how far you get in the life, the person who's in charge will always win. It's an important lesson. And even when I'm beating like 3 10-year-olds and I'm in the lead, I still think anything could happen and I could lose. And I don't feel I have that on Crash. Are you talking Crash Tag Team Racing or just the
Crash
original on the PS1?
the original one on the
Original
PS1.
PS1. I don't feel like you have that on Crash Team Racing.
Well, I'd caveat that and say in Mario Kart, if you're in the lead, Blue Shell, it's just a complete fuck you item. Like, you're better off being in second place, just sort of creeping behind
But then
number one.
there's the strategy in the game. You're not going
Yeah.
to like sort of just sit there and in first place and go, you've got to think, right, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to, in case of the blue shell, and take over, keep me items. That's what improves the game.
I think the strategy in Crash Team Racing is better because with the boost mechanics, there's just more skill involved. They have that kind of meter thing where it's almost like a bit of a mini game. You have to kind of build rhythm and momentum, and I don't know. I have played Mario Kart, all of them. I was avid on Mario Kart 64. I think the multiplayer is fantastic in that, but I don't know. I don't have many friends, so I play single player a lot.
You know, is I'm the same. I'm definitely a solo gamer, but again, I think nostalgia is a very powerful thing. When I think back, the only time I really played multiplayer games was around that era, so
Yeah.
maybe that just sits with me. I agree with SNES Mario Kart is hot shit. It is terrible. If you go back that, there is no speed at all. It's not fast. It honestly, it feels like you're on one of those mobility scooters going around, but with a turtle rather than a OAP.
Is
Would
good.
you say Crash, the remake of Crash Team Racing, is better than, is 8 the newest Mario Kart? Would you say it's better than Mario Kart 8?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think the only thing they fucked up in the remake of Crash Team Racing was all the microtransactions because that was just dodgy business practicing. But in terms of the gameplay, it's flawless, and I platinumed it. And I think the thing as well is I don't like racing games. Forza, Gran Turismo, fuck off. I don't like all that. But Crash Team Racing is so comfortable, and it just amps you up. And I like the collectible side of things as well, because in Mario Kart, you have the races and you can win and everything like that, but you haven't got like your trophy cabinet. You know what I mean? You're kind of, this is what I've achieved from all of this. And you just get more progression, I think, in credit. And the story mode and like the bosses are a nice little touch. I think the shortcut kind of implementation is better. I think there's more to explore, more kind of secrets to uncover with it. I just think as a package, yeah, all right. I think for me, as like a single player kind of person, I think it's better.
So I think we're maybe disagreeing but agreeing. I think we're coming from the aspect of saying Crash Team Racing is a better single player game
Yeah.
and Mario Kart may be a better multiplayer game, but we don't know because you haven't got any friends.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're boring down to. I mean, this is turning into more of a therapy session, which you've tricked me into. So let's do a gaming podcast. No, let's crack into your childhood.
Show me where Donkey Kong touched you. Right, so to finish off the show, our last little part we're going to do is Room 101. What we're going to do in this part of the podcast is basically steal other people's ideas and use them as our own. Room 101, I think, was Radio 2 or BBC. It was on, had a show as well on BBC, didn't it?
Yeah, Frank Skinner did it on
yes
BBC 2.
Yeah, I don't know whether Paul Merton did it for a while as well.
Yeah, maybe. It was a good show. I liked it.
Yep, it was. So if you don't know Room 101, basically we are putting something in Room 101. It'll stay there forever, never to be viewed by the human public ever again. My first one is DLC completely, and that includes microtransactions. Now, firstly, I know there's good DLC. Witcher 3, the Cyberpunk ones. I think we're just talking about Project CD Red, aren't we, really? But there are other good ones out there. But for me, there is so much shit out there that I would sacrifice those to make people actually put everything in the game to start out or start up with it. Usually, you'd get a game, you unlock cheats, you unlock extra levels by completing the game, by putting cheats in, stuff like that. And now it's like, give us your credit card and you can have the whole game. I think if you took them out, it would just make game developers better. It would just make them think we have to have everything that we want in there and it would be better for everyone. I saw from day one when people were laughing at horse armor in Oblivion. Even then I thought, this is parasitic. This is going to go south. I think it was like £3 for some gold armor for your horse. And now it is just everywhere.
I, in a, you know, a rare moment, I think, in this podcast, I agree with you. I think it is a really shady practice. And I completely agree that it's good for a game to have a kind of life cycle. But at the same time, it's just a money cow, you know, a cash cow, whatever they call it, you know, milking things until they're dry. And, you know, especially I was looking on the PS store last night because it's still in the January sales and things, and all of it is just fucking add-ons and you know, extras, and just, you know, an extra hour or this, that and the other, and this kind of Frankenstein way of just stitching bits and pieces together. And I'm the same as you. I think some DLC is fantastic, like Bloodborne DLC is phenomenal, I think. Same with all the Dark Souls kind of games. But and I know it's not DLC, but kind of tying it into the whole releasing a fucking game that is broken and
day
saying
one patch,
yeah, we'll fix it later on. It's just like, what the hell? If you did that in any other job, it would be
you'd
be put in jail or sued or something like that. So yeah, I agree with you.
A rare moment of agreement. Let's see if it lasts for the rest of this segment there. So what's your first one, Artie?
So my first one is controller immersion features. I hate them. I absolutely hate them.
And well, the agreement has ended here then. I'll let you see your piece and then we'll come back.
So when the PS5 got announced, they said, oh, we're going to do this amazing thing with the controllers and you can feel like, you know, it's burrowing into your bones and all that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then within about half an hour of playing Astro's Playroom or whatever, I was like, yeah, this is kind of impressive, but this is just fucking uncomfortable. And I think that's what it boils down to. And I'm playing Silent Hill 2 Remake at the moment. And I decided to turn it on because I thought, you know, it's an immersive game. It's all about horror and all that kind of thing. And I ended up turning it off within 10 minutes. The whole pressure on the triggers, you know, why do that? I don't understand the reasoning. And it's like, oh, it's making you feel like you can pull a real gun and stuff. It says, well, I'm not. I'm playing a bloody video game. And all right, vibrations, that's been a thing since, you know, PS2, I think PS1 maybe introduced it as well. Yeah. But I just don't understand. I think it's a gimmick. I really do. And I think maybe in the next generation of console, they potentially will get rid of it. I think it's going to be like the Wii, you know, the motion control side of things. I think this is just a fad that is going to die out.
See, with me, I think I half agree, half disagree. I think I agree with that. It is a bit of a gimmick sometimes. But I played Astro's Playroom, and the fact I could feel the pad feel like it was raining. I thought that was awesome. Now, for me, I agree in most games, it's just a fad. Just like, oh, let's put it in, this, that, and the other, and it doesn't need to be there. Where I disagree is if it's like a full immersion game. Let's say you're playing Red Dead, which is not a game that you go in for some arcade-y fun or anything like that. You've got to watch every action when you're skinning things, and you've got to, your hair grows. And when you're trying to really create immersion, I think that's where it would be really good. Things like Senua's Sacrifice, that type of stuff where you're in the game. I think just to put it onto games like randomly, I agree with you on that one. I've got one of those Logitech steering wheels I got off a friend recently, and it gives you the haptic feedback, like when you turn into a corner, like an actual racing thing, it will fight you. And my friend, he loves F1, he loves bikes, he loves that type of stuff. I'm like you, I'm not a big racing car game guy. I prefer a kart racer.
Yeah.
So it was fun to have a go at and put the sort of sensitivity up to 100, but I did think I was in a fight and I was in a workout after one lap with the Nuremberg ring. That's not what I want from a game. I go in to sort of enjoy myself, have a bit fun. I'd rather an arcadey one. So I do agree haptic has to have its place, but I do think we're going through a stage now where Astrobot, which was the first game to really showcase haptic feedback, did it the best. Then no one else has come like really close. Do you not think in, I don't know if you can remember Astrobot, there's a part where you walk and it's raining, and I think I was sort of on the bandwagon, like, oh, Christ, it feels like it's raining on me pad.
But, yeah, I mean, like, it's impressive. Like, I'm not lying. It is impressive. I haven't played the full game Astrobot yet. I've only played the playroom. But in that instance, yeah, it's great. I think as a gimmicky kind of game, it was a tech demo and it kind of was showing off everything. But as you say, no one's kind of got close to reenacting that. And
so
just
would you... Sorry. You were saying you're doing Silent Hill 2 at the minute.
Yeah.
If it took away that sort of it being hard to pull the trigger on a gun and bow and arrow and all that crap or whatever, but it just focused on you walking down a dark corridor, there's the ambience, there's like horror and stuff, and the pad, it feels like it's raindrops because it's raining and it's just a little bit. Do you not think that would enhance the game a little bit or not?
A little bit. I mean, it's got the static kind of coming through the controller, and that's like a nice touch because the original always did that. But I don't want to get too much into the Silent Hill 2 remake, but there's so many enemies in there and you're constantly like wailing your sticks around and, you know, firing things and stuff. And the pressure on the triggers, I don't know, it just makes, even though it's not painful, because I don't want to sound like a complete wimp, but it just doesn't feel right. It feels uncomfortable. And clearly I am not, you know, if we ever go into a war situation, I'm going to hide in the toilet because I don't want to do that. But, you know, I just, it takes me out of it. It really does. I'm not thinking, oh, wow, it feels like I'm in Silent Hill. It just makes me feel like, oh, God, I've got to swing this flipping thing again and get this monster off my back.
I think because I've only had a little part of it in that Astro's Playroom and then it hasn't really came in any games I've played yet.
Yeah.
I'm still... not, I haven't been sort of sickened by it yet. I haven't been like sort of, oh, shite, it's going to be an effort to pull the trigger again. I haven't got to that point yet.
It just depends on the gameplay loop, I guess, then, because Astro's Playroom is so creative and there's literally like a new thing to do every single level or stage, then it doesn't get boring. But as you say, like if you're just doing the same thing, whether it's shooting or whatever, it's just going to grind down your bones, I think.
I think it's a sort of prerequisite for the future. I think when it gets more VR, I think if you're doing VR and you've got the headset on and you're getting haptic feedback as well, again, it's about immersion rather than fun, isn't it? It's that haptic feedback isn't there to create fun, which is what video games originally and should be there for. It's to make you feel like you're in... to go back to the one we've been keep saying, Silent Hill, to make you feel like you're in hell. I don't want to feel like I'm in hell. I want to enjoy the game I'm playing. So I sort of agree.
It's purely a comfort thing. That's all it is. You know, impressive, but I always turn that shit off.
My second thing for Room 101, now you mentioned earlier on that you got a platinum on a game. How are you with platinum hunting? Do you just go out if you like the game, or do you actively go out to try and get it?
It's purely on the game, and I've only platinumed two games, Cuphead and Celeste.
Cool. I have 102 platinums, and I do that multiple times. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's my OCD or needing a challenge, but I when I play a game, once I put it on and I've got one trophy, something in my head goes, you have to get them all, even if this game is terrible. I put 214 hours into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this year. My community was pretty much sick of me playing it. Anyway, on what I put in room 101 for me is online trophies. Absolutely hate it. As a trophy hunter, any of the trophy hunters out there, let us know in the comments which multiplayer trophy you hate. It's that thing of sometimes they'll do things like you have to get into the top 10 on this leaderboard. What it means is you have to be the top 10 in the world, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then it's the whole thing of once the servers go down, right, that's it, you can't get in it. There should be a way to sort of patch out the platinums, the trophies that are online only when the server goes down or that are glitch and stuff like that, but it just annoys me. It makes me not want to play a game because, again, in my head, I did go through a little time of if I played a game, I had to platinum, and that wasn't a good few months. Well, I enjoyed it at the time, but looking back, it was so much time wasted. Now, I'm not as bothered, and if I enjoy the game, I will go and try and get it. But those online trophies just completely ruin the trophy list. A trophy list should enhance the game. And a lot of the time, a lot of these online ones don't. They're just there to make you play online, to make the game, like, their shelf life last longer.
I'll agree with you, because I don't really play online, so I've never gone for an online trophy. So, but just getting into an online match just generally sounds like an absolute nightmare to me. So I will fully agree with you on that. And I think, like, I would love to go for platinums, but I look at some of the lists. If I'm enjoying a game, I think, yeah, I could put a bit more time into this after the credits roll. If the list says something ridiculous, like play the whole game again with this one particular weapon, it's like, what? Like, what? And for like a little bling in the corner when you get it, it just doesn't seem worth it.
That's everything my life is about, that little bling, Artie. You just pulling
it's a
down
nice,
my
it,
perception.
It's a nice little hit of dopamine, I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, for me, Cuphead and Celeste, I wanted to do it because bragging rights, I
was going to say, yeah.
Say, like, yeah, fuck you, I platinum Cuphead.
Yeah.
But, and I thought the achievements were fairly straightforward but challenging. It wasn't like play the whole game again. It was nothing like that. It was just like do specific things in these specific levels and... You know.
Is this your idea of hell, Artie? I played Hogwarts Legacy and I got the platinum on that. I had to do the whole game, spend hours going around the open world map, collecting all the collectibles, and then I had to do the first, I think, an hour and a half or 2 hours of the game three times because there's a trophy linked to each different house, like Gryffindor, Slytherin, stuff like that. So once I'd done everything, I had to then play the first 2 hours of the game three times. I don't know.
I can't think of anything worse.
Like,
I think it's an amazing achievement and fair play to you if you do that. But I just can't give myself that time to commit myself to that game. I mean, I like watching the Dark Souls runs when they do it on like level one and stuff. And these people are literally crying by the end of it. And it's like, why are you doing that to yourself? The only other one I thought I'd consider doing, and I think it was around COVID, because we were all stuck indoors and not doing anything. This one in Dead Rising where you have to spend the whole 3 days just bumming around the mall and not do any of the missions.
And you can't save, can you? You have to do it all in one sort of sitting.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought about doing that one, but then I watched YouTube videos of people like needing to take a piss and just, you know, wound up with the whole thing and like crying and, you know, breaking things. And I thought, oh God, no, maybe not. And I think as well, because I love certain games with so much kind of passion, I feel like if I put myself out there to platinum something, I'm going to end up hating it by the end of it.
It can be. There are great platinum lists out there where you go and you play the game and you think doing that platinum made me enjoy the game more. And sometimes you go out there and it's a pointless, tedious grind. Like you mentioned there, you mentioned speedrun, you mentioned sitting out doing one. Recently, between Christmas and New Year, I did an 11.5-hour stream. And we played from the start, Jak and Daxter, the PS4 version, and I said, I'm not coming off until I get the Platinum. I'd had a look online. It should have took about 10 hours. So I thought, right, well, it's Christmas time. I knew I was going to do a long stream over Christmas, so I did that one. But because I did it all in one, I thought, when you mentioned speedrun, I thought, well, we'll do a speedrun. So I got the timer and stuff, looked all professional, and I completed the game in, I think it was 10 hours 40. So okay. I've uploaded that to speedrun.com, and it's waiting to be verified. And if it's verified, I am officially the slowest Jak and Daxter speedrunner in the world. Which for me,
I thought you were going to pull out. Oh, I've got the record for the. I was like, hang on a minute. You said the average was like 10 hours.
No, the fastest is 4 hours, and the slowest was 7 hours 40. So I'm 2 hours behind the slowest. But I always thought, if you're not first, be last. That's who you remember. And I feel sorry for the guy that has to verify it and sit through 10 hours of me talking shit to the stream just to go, yeah, you're really fucking slow.
Yeah, that's a dull job, isn't it? God.
It is. You know what it is? I doubt they get paid. It's only like so someone's probably volunteering to watch me talk shit.
Jesus. Yeah. God, do they not want to do anything else with their lives?
I mean, we're trying to get people to listen to this podcast, so I don't think that's an angle we should go down.
No, that's true. Yeah, if you're listening to this dross, then you can sit through Jak and Daxter for 10 hours. Right, let's mix things up a bit. I'm going to go with a level. Well, it's a kind of few levels in a game that I love, but these sections for me absolutely kill the whole experience, and I hate them to my absolute core. It's Max Payne, and it's the nightmare levels, right, where you're running around a pitch black room trying to follow little dribbly bits of cum on the floor.
Red cum.
To try and find an exit, which is out in the great beyond, listening to horrifically uncomfortable screaming noises. It's so... And the annoying thing is, I think the idea is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, putting him in a kind of surreal Silent Hill kind of situation where he's trying to figure out what's going on in his head and escape the kind of nightmare. I think that's a really good idea. But the way they've done it is so broken and so kind of trial and error focused that it just completely takes you out of that frame of mind. So you're following the red stuff, and then it takes you down. It's like a labyrinth, you know, and you're literally walking on a beam. So it's so easy to fall off and fuck up. That level can fuck off.
Shall I tell you that I have got a cheat to get round this?
Oh, go on then.
So back when I played it on the PC. I'm assuming it'll work on PS2 as well. By the way, if you are going to play Max Payne, don't play the PS2 version. I played that for the first time recently after playing it on PC originally, and it is far better on PC. The cutscenes are different. I think they just load up all the comic book panels rather than fade them in of it. Yeah, and stuff like that. It just, again, I'm not PC master race. I don't really play PC anymore, but with the bullet time mouse and keyboard, I found so easy to control it when you go into slow motion. Anyway, onto the cheat. I was having the same absolute bollocks with you trying to get through the level when I was a kid. I don't know whether someone told me this or I saw it online, probably Game FAQs or something. If you put the brightness and contrast to literally 100, you can see the block of the road, because it's just like blocks that are put together and they've got the blood trail sort of on it, but because it's black and the background's black, you can't see it. If you turn the brightness and the contrast right up, you can see the actual path.
The contrast.
Yeah, well, with that game, definitely the contrast. But you can see the path and you can just walk along it really easily.
Yeah, that is a good hack. That's a good cheat.
I mean, it does bring it out of the game that you have to, like, put it so it's like practically light grey rather than black. But I do agree they are terrible, really, really bad. In regards to what you say, a good idea done shit
horribly.
Yeah.
And I say I like the game. I think it's really, really good. But I thought they really fucked that bit up. You know,
favorite Max Payne then?
Probably one.
See,
regardless of those nightmare bits, like I like all of them. I think 3 was a really like goofy kind of one, but I liked the kind of personality look at Max. It really kind of fleshed him out a lot more. How about you?
For me, three. I do love one. I played one loads, but I don't know whether I liked three because it was the underdog, because people don't really give Max Payne 3 so much love. Max Payne 1, and a lot of people go for 2. Is it Mona Sack? Something in Mona Sack?
Fall of Max Payne.
Fall of Max Payne, yeah. A lot of people go for that one. But for me, I loved 3. I hated the... In the cutscenes where you've got to seem like he's drunk and it goes like a little bit blurry and stuff, they can fuck off. But apart from that... I really like 3, and I love 1. I'm not saying I don't like the others. I did love 1. Got me into loving Remedy games, Control, Alan Wake, all that. I'm actually looking for a decent deal on Alan Wake 2 at the minute, because like I say, a 30 something gamer, and I want physical media, so I haven't bought a digital version yet. But I just love that Sam Lake's a genius.
You think, I like him. You think it's kind of arrogant that like Max Payne is literally him?
Yeah. Well, I've seen a few documentaries, and I don't know whether it was just they were a small studio. Yeah. So all the other guys and in the game, the enemies, the other characters, that are all people who worked in Remedy. They just took photos and mocapped them on. But it is a little bit, I'll be the main character.
I'm so like damaged, and I'm so, you know, but I'm also like amazing.
Do you know what it is though? I've got someone who gets Sam, who gets into my streams, and he's a voiceover artist. He's a really good fella. You can tell he's a good fella because he's left the UK and moved to Scandinavia, so he knows what's what. And he worked for Remedy for a bit, and I didn't realise until he posted a picture of him and Sam Lake up, and I was like, oh, Christ, you know Sam Lake? He went, yeah, I work for Remedy for a bit, so I used to bump into him all the time. I don't know him, but he said, really nice guy, which is always what I love to hear. Like, had time for everyone, really humble, would talk to everyone, wasn't like, I'm in charge. So that's nice to hear.
No, that's good. And I like Remedy because they have kind of passion projects. They're not kind of following trends. Yeah. They're doing their own sort of thing. And I have a lot of time for that. I have Alan Wake 2, but I haven't played it yet. Control, I had a lot of fun with that. Did they do the... what was that show? I can't remember what it was called.
Quantum
Leap. Quantum Break.
Quantum Leap was an amazing show, but complete... That would be a cool game. You jump into different people's bodies.
Driver San Francisco, but with people. Yeah.
But good.
Yeah. We could be game devs. Maybe, I'm sure.
This is it. That's what producers do, isn't it? There's an idea, there's money, make it. We just lack the money.
And the intelligence and the skills and everything else that comes with it.
Yep.
I recently did a kind of review on my channel about LA Noire, and overall I kind of said like I really liked it, and I thought it was a really good game and did a lot of things for like the industry and kind of evolved certain things. But in replaying it, I've realized how much faffing about and padding there is in that game. And it all comes from examining things. And I'm putting this mainly down to LA Noire, but I know that like Resident Evil does it and Silent Hill does it as well, but I think they do it better. But the whole picking up things that are useless and making you go into an animation where you have to twizzle it around on your wanking wrist to figure out if it's useful or not. And it wouldn't be so bad if like you picked up things and they were part of your inventory, and then at the end of the missions you could figure out what was useful and what wasn't and what, you know, needed to go where. But the whole like scanning a crime scene, picking up something, a beer bottle, a bit of paper, and realizing it's completely useless only to put it down again and to find something else. And it's like, right, why did they put this in the game? And I get that, all right, they can't just give you the clues to everything, but it is literally just wasting your time. And then they have the gonads to make you like buzz the controller, say, pick this shit up. And you're like, okay. And then Cole or whatever his name goes, was, I don't think I need this for the case. Talking to you like you're the moron.
See, I'm not with you on this one. Nah. For me, LA Noire, I love LA Noire. I used to play an old detective, or what do you call them, where they've got the video, sort of actual video footage in before the graphics were good enough. Anyway, yeah. I used to play a game like that called the Tex Murphy series, and I love a detective game and puzzles like in 2 minutes of that. But what I hate is I used to play a lot of point-and-click adventures. Everything you can pick up, pick it up because you're going to use it. But then that takes away from the puzzle and the working out what happened. If just, oh, well, this is important because I can pick it up, but I don't know why. Let's put it in my pocket. Oh, I can pick that up. That must be something I need to use. We'll put it in. Putting some red herrings in, I think, makes you think a little bit more.
I agree. I completely agree. But with L.A. Noire, it doesn't let you take it. So right. You're literally picking up something and then putting it straight back down again.
Right, so it's sort of like he's got ESP of, this is fucking useless, put it straight down. Whereas if you picked it up, then at the end you went, this is useful, that's not, this is useful, that's not. It's a better mechanic.
Yeah, and I think that uses like critical thinking and things. Mm-hmm. But it is literally put in to pad the game out and, as you say, just make it seem like you're not just picking up everything that's useful. So I think it's a good idea that you should throw red herrings in, but at least give you the option to take it home with you and figure out whether it's useful or not. Mm-hmm. But the whole just like, nah, we don't need this, just pop it back and keep looking.
Right, okay. So in a way, you're seeing...
Like Elymar is kind of built on that frame.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying sort of like a half-baked sort of, oh, we'll put this in, it'll be cool, but not then really thinking, how can we make it improve the game? Let's just put it in to pad it out.
Yeah, and I think in just terms of examining things as well, I think it's in the Resident Evil remake. And I think when I first started playing it, I got really stuck, and I had searched everywhere, and I got all the items and things like that, and it just wouldn't let me progress. And then I think for one of the items, you really have to examine it. You have to really, really turn it around, and then you find like a little latch or something, and then it opens up and there's like another compartment to the item, which brings out something else. Just that whole kind of twizzle something around in your hand until you hit the sweet spot. I don't know. There's just something about it which irritates me.
What irritates me, what's even worse is... I think the Tomb Raider remakes did it. When you picked up an artifact, you could, you know, the wanking wrist, as you said. Yeah. But it didn't do anything. You could just, like, use it to examine them, like, the 3D model. But then there might, again, trophy hunt, there might have been a trophy mixed in somewhere where you had to, like, examine everything. So I'd pick it up, wank a wrist round a little bit, and then put it back down. Like, I'm not looking at it. And then there'd be one in, like, 400 pickups that actually might have had something on. Oh, no, that's what's it. You'd move it round, and when you got to a certain point, you'd just see a little bit more. Should see, like... Oh, well, this was from the Ming Dynasty. Like, yeah. Oh, great. But I needed all of them for some trophy. Again, why trophy hunting is sometimes a bit wank.
Yeah. But and as you said that, yeah, Tomb Raider and Uncharted did it as well, yeah. the examining things. So many people did it. And in playing Silent Hill 2 at the moment, every item is everything you pick up, you can take. And the combining and the examining stuff is all pretty streamlined, and I think it worked really, really well. But yeah, that kind of, oh, this thing's useless, so why the hell did you waste my time?
Yeah, I agree with that one, then. You've changed me, you've swayed me.
There you go.
Right.
Send us home. Bring a good one in. Come on.
Right, for me, it's going to be a quick one. I'm not going into it too much. Just make your console pay the fucking games that were on the old console.
Yeah.
And then the ones before that, don't charge us money to buy a game we've already got, we've already put this many hours in, and do nothing with it. Like, it's hard to play a PS2 on thingy's hardware and stuff. You're making the console. Make it fucking easy. If emulators can do it, just when you're making the console, put that emulator into it and do it.
No, I agree. And the whole, like, we can't do that. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. You look at PS5 and, like, what that can churn out. You're telling me you can't play a PS2 graphic, blocky, you know, smeared faces all over the shop. You can't play that. I've never believed that at all.
No, it's all for money, isn't it? It's all for money. I think, again, I do have a lot of love for Nintendo and where they take things, and I think they do care about gaming, but they are rife for it. I think they brought out the new, like, the virtual console type thing, isn't it, on the Switch, where you can pay, like, a monthly thing, and you get... But again, you don't get them all. I don't... When you're going that far back and it's cartridge, maybe I understand, but, like... Everything from disc on PS1 should work on PS5. And again, as a retro collector and having like 100 PS1 games in my collection, I'd love just to be able to put them in my PS5 and have a play with them, rather than running my PS1 through an upscaler, through an HDMI, and it not being as good as if I just put them on PlayStation. It's again, money grabbing, and it's bollocks.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm consistently refraining from buying the PlayStation Plus subscription extra premium or whatever it is, where they do include the PS1 and the PS2 games for that very reason. And yeah, it sucks getting out the old consoles to hook them up, but I don't know, I kind of get a nice little nostalgic buzz from it.
For me, the worst thing is it's never going to change, because as gamers, we go, it's bullshit, they're charging us for DLC, microtransactions, to play games we already own, and then they bring them out and we all buy them. So it's never going to change, because we want to play them and we want to get that DLC so much that we'll complain and bitch about it, but we won't as a community ever go, right, well, fuck off, we're not playing it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to bring it into another one, but I think generally remasters as well. You know, we talk about remake remasters, but some remasters, literally, they've just rubbed a bit of Vaseline on it.
Last of Us Part 2, and it just came out? What the?
Yeah, it's just upscaling money is what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Last of Us, the original Last of Us, they remade it and it's still like 50 quid.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like the game, but... And you know those memes that you see where it's like they show the comparisons between like the PS3 and where we are now, and people are like, oh my God, it still looks so amazing. And it's literally like, there's a few more shimmers on the water.
It's like, at the minute, I think the big thing is lighting with ray tracing, isn't it? Whenever I see the PS5 and the PS4, it looks like they've opened a window and there's a shaft of light coming through. Like, I'm not playing that amount of money for a shaft of light.
I know. I mean, I'm so glad that the kind of retro feel kind of came back with like Hotline Miami and like The Messenger and stuff like that. I mean, games, the SNES games still hold up, I think, for that kind of reason, because the graphics are just...
Well, that's why you'll always see games, I think, redone in sort of like pixel art. Like, you'll never see someone redo it. Well, they do every now and again, some horror games I've seen recently, but they'll never redo like PS1 polygon. Like, oh, this is beautiful. But you'll always see loads of sort of like your Stardew Valley and stuff like that, where it still looks absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, remaster Bubsy 3D. There you go, that's my full last...
Bubsy. So that's it. That's the first one. Is it in the can, they say, in the industry or something? All done, all recorded without any stumbling over our words. Thank you for joining us on the first one. It is rough. It is ready. I am learning not to talk over my co-host, Artie, because I am a very egotistical man. So we will keep working on that if you join us for future episodes. If you do want to find us outside of the podcast, myself on TikTok, retro.revival1, on Twitch, retrorevival1, and on YouTube, retrorevivaltom, all one word. Artie, where do we find your lovely face?
Just on TikTok, at BoxyArtie. I'm too lazy to Twitch and that lot, so.
Just be honest. It's just too much. Like I say, thank you once again for joining us for the episode. In the comments, let us know what you thought, how shit we were, and if you're going to join us for episode 2. And with that, any last words, Artie?
Could be wonderful, it could be bloody awful. Let's enjoy it together.
Let's just say this, Artie. It'll be wonderful for us.
Exactly.
Fuck everyone else. And on that note, bye.
Yeah, see you later, mate. Bye.